On this edition of the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our Recap YouTube channel, that's R-E-K-A-P, Gordon Whitmire and I discuss everything going on with the Cubs as they head into the offseason. Juan Soto, Cody Bellinger, Shohei Ohtani. Will the Cubs get skittish and not go after a big name? Plus, we talk about the contemporary committee for Major League Baseball for the Hall of Fame. Is Lou Piniella getting in? What about umpire Joe West? What about manager Jim Leland? Welcome into the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our Recap YouTube channel. Tell your friends, Recap on YouTube, R-E-K-A-P, with my partner, Gordon Whitmire. I'm David Kaplan. All right, Gordon, let's get right into this because the playoffs are rolling along and Cubs fans are sitting at home, A, lamenting their club didn't get in because they didn't push enough chips in at the deadline. B, they're like, wait a minute. Kyle Schwarber, we had a guy like that who played for us. Is that the same guy? Yes. Oh, Bryce Harper, who named his dog freaking Wrigley. He plays for Philly. Oh, and Nick Castellanos, who never wanted to leave. He plays for Philly, too. Your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are very similar to Bryce Harper's. His quote was, that's why you spend the money. Look where these guys are. It's the same thing they did last year, right? Got off to a little bit of a slow start. Finished strong, got within two wins of winning the whole thing last year as a wild card team, as, by the way, the last team in last year. This year, they're the first wild card team, and they look like they're about to do it again. They're the betting favorite in Vegas at this point among the four teams that are left. And why do you do that? That's why you do that. The Mets fans, the Padres fans, they might say, well, no, you can't do that, and all the smart guys will sit around and say, well, no, those are reasons why you don't spend the money. No, 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 no. What Philly's doing is the reason you hire somebody like Dave Dombrowski and you spend good money. Like, you spend the money, you have to make the right decisions. And the stuff that's going on in the game today with way too many front offices, and Jerry DePoto in Seattle said it out loud, basically, is that these guys are risk averse. They're trying to do incremental long-term gains that all the metrics suggest, the economics of player evaluation and player value suggest. But no, man, this is a bottom line, zero sum industry. You win or you don't. And there's tons of money out there. All teams have it. You should spend. And that's why you're sitting in those GM and team president's office. That's, you get to make those decisions. And they don't always turn out good. But that doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do, and the Phillies are showing you why.
Okay, so the Phillies go out and they spend on Castellanos, who wanted to be a Cub. Harper wanted to be a Cub. Schwarber never wanted to stop being a Cub. Is there, if you had to pick one of the three, is there one of them that you would have said, I take that guy over the others? And you got to factor in the amount of money, everything into it. Who's the one guy you would take, not just the best player?
Okay, well, the most egregious that they don't have on their roster right now is Schwarber, because he's maybe one of the top three all-time worst non-tender decisions in the history of the game, right? David Ortiz, Cody Bellinger might be in that top three with the Dodgers last year. And then over concerns about $8 million coming out of 2020, they whacked Schwarber, and he goes and signs for 10, becomes a two-time All-Star and a home run champ, and he's been done nothing but been in the playoffs ever since for two different teams. So that's the most egregious. But if you're saying of those three, which would I have, given that the Cubs essentially had the opportunity to have all three of them, any of the three of them on their roster right now, it'd be Bryce Harper. I always liked Bryce Harper. I always put him on my Mount Rushmore of the best players in the game. And he's got that monster left-handed bat. He plays his ass off. He's got an edge to him. You see how big he comes up in the postseason. You saw the way he came back from Tommy John surgery. When it looked like he might miss more time because he's coming back as an outfielder, he says, no, I'll come back sooner. He came back 2 months early from that as a DH. And then he said, I'll play first base for you because Reese Hoskins is out. And I'll come back to the field even sooner. This guy's a gamer. This guy's one of the best talents in the game, and he's a monster left-handed bat. I would have signed him.
So if you look at where the Phillies are, where the Diamondbacks are, the Phillies are making a run for the second straight year, so it's tough to say they're not up for sustained success. Is the Diamondback success a flash in the pan to you?
No, because they're so young, right? Zach Allen's a young pitcher who is a Cy Young candidate for most of the year. Corbin Carroll's going to be the rookie of the year in the National League this year, and that's no fluke. He is that talent, so much so that they gave him a multi-year contract before the season or early in the season. So they have young talent that figures to be around for a while, and I expect them to be contenders. We talked about them a little bit before the season started. I suggested they're one of those teams. Yeah, you brought up Texas. I brought up Arizona as teams to pay attention to this year that might surprise some people.
I liked Texas. A, I love their manager. B, I love when ownership doesn't go, well, we already spent and those guys got hurt, so we're done. They went, oh, DeGrom's out, go get Scherzer. Oh, Scherzer's out, go get Montgomery. Oh, we need another bullpen arm, go get Aroldis Chapman. I mean, they pushed
their chips in.
Well, that's an ownership committed to winning.
If you're a fan, how can you not want your team to be like that? Look, just because of this, like you said, that doesn't mean we're not all in. We're in. This is our window. We're committed to this. Look what they did this offseason before last. They committed $500 million to their middle infield. And those two guys have been a huge part of their lineup. They're the top two hitters in their batting order. And they, you know, we're talking about Semien and Corey Seager. Those guys have been huge offensively and defensively. And they sort of anchored what you were doing from a non-pitching side even before you got to this year. And then you add all that pitching and then you double down on it. And that's why you're here. To your point, I friggin' love that. And the teams with resources, and there's more of them now than you think, should be operating that way, especially with so many playoff berths on the line every year now. 40% of the league gets in, and the Diamondbacks were the last ones to get in this year. They're in the Final Four. The Phillies were the last ones to get in last year. They made it to the World Series.
Okay, so you look at this Cubs team. I look at this Cubs team. I think they're ready to take the next step. Will they? Talk is cheap. Got to put your money there. That said, you sent me a text, hey, we got to get this done because I'm busy writing. And I wrote you back and I said exactly this. I said, where did I write? Here it is. Let me write your effing column for you, buddy. You're all playing for second place because it's the Cubs division going forward for the foreseeable next few seasons. Take that.
Why don't you read what I wrote? Yes.
Yeah, and I cashed in at the sports book this year on all your Cubs hot takes from last winter. That's why I still have to work.
Yeah, you're goddamn right.
Okay, yeah. So how close are the Cubs? In your opinion, then I'll tell you mine, how close are they to being able to do what the Diamondbacks and the Phillies? I'm not telling you they're going to win 150 billion games like Atlanta, but it hasn't gotten them anywhere the last 2 years either. How close are they?
Well, look, this is a team that was 10 games under 500 in June, and we discovered that wasn't who they were, right? At the end of the season, and things tend to balance out, that's not who they were. They wound up winning 83 games and missed the postseason by one game behind. Now, that said, they had losing records against every team that made the playoffs. So take that for what it's worth. They were 1-6 against Arizona, which is the team that beat them by the game. So you win two of those games, you're ahead of Arizona, you knock them out, you're in, and then they're 1-5 against the Phillies. So the two teams that are still in there, 2-11 against them. So take that for what it's worth. They're not close to those two teams this year, but they were an 83-win team with a Cy Young Award candidate starting pitcher in Justin Steele. And it just so happens he's left-handed and throws with a little bit of power. And you love that. in your equation for trying to win ball games over the course of a season. So I like where they start. I don't think we've talked about this. We've gone back and forth on it. I don't think Cody Bellinger's coming back. I think he's going to get a big payday from somebody, and I think it's not going to be the Cubs. That said, the money you're saving on him, the money that Hayward's money that's falling off the books, and the fact that you're the Chicago freaking Cubs, you can go do whatever you want. They need to be in the market for the best free agent starting pitcher that's out there. I like Aaron Nola. If you want to quibble with me and say somebody else, you want to go with Sonny Gray, go with Sonny Gray. Hey, go get both.
Blake Snell.
If you like Blake Snell, I like Blake Snell. He just doesn't stay healthy long enough. But go get one of those guys. Go get one of those guys and somebody else, and get a ton of bullpen help and go get two hitters. You can do all that. And not all that has to be what I'm suggesting with the best starting pitcher available. I do think you ought to be in on that. But if you got that and then you did increments, you went and got good, reliable players to fill your other needs, I think you're right in it. I think you're right in the division race next year. Remember, Milwaukee, which won the division this year, they were without Brandon Woodruff most of the year. Granted, they're out. They're without him all of next year because of an injury, which means they might have Corbin Burnes back when we thought he might otherwise get traded. One more year of club control. Willy Adames, the shortstop, one more year of club control. You thought he might be a guy that they would consider trading. Probably both those guys are coming back now. They're going to be pretty good, but Woodruff won't be there at all next year. This division, despite some gains by teams like the Reds, despite the fact that the Cardinals fell way off and they'll probably go big in the offseason for pitching, it's there for the taking next year. And I think the Cubs, if they're not in as good a position as anybody else, they're in strong enough position to make a play.
We also learned today Michael Fulmer is out all of next year.
He was out most of this year when it came to how well he pitched, so who cares? Yeah,
when he came back after struggling early, he was really, really good, and then he got injured again, tried to come back, but he had his UCL surgery done, and he is out until 2025, so you could scratch him from the bullpen. They need to add a bunch of arms. I think they need to add a superstar. I mean, I'm serious here. Dansby Swanson's a finalist for the Gold Glove. Nico Hoerner, finalist for the Gold Glove. Really good players. Glad they're on the team. Seiya is their best returning offensive player. Now, if they get Bellinger back, he's in that discussion. They need a superstar, face of the team type guy, whether that is Ohtani, pie in the sky, whether that is Juan Soto, who's going to get moved, maybe Pete Alonso, who's a 50-homer guy probably at Wrigley. They need one of those guys. Agree?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, philosophically, sure. But, you know, we talked about this. You know, one, I mean, those are the guys. Those are it. Those are the guys that are out there. Pete Alonso, as a trade candidate, he might be the likeliest to be able to go out and get, but I would put him last on the list that you provided because he's a right-handed bat. I like the idea of a lefty. I think you need to, if you're going to add that guy and that commitment, I think he almost has to be a lefty. Sure, if you can go out and get these guys, boy, that's a tall task. You called Shohei pie in the sky. I think Soto might be pie in the sky. And we've already talked about Bellinger. So maybe that makes you rethink
Go back and listen to yourself. It's the Chicago freaking Cubs. Jesus Christ. Soto's pie in the sky. Ohtani's pie in the sky. But who the fuck is signing these guys? Why can't the Cubs get one of them?
You're the one that called Ohtani pie in the sky. I'm telling you, pie in the sky in terms of whether these guys go that hard after them and make it happen compared to the other offers that are going to be out there for these guys. I agree with you in principle. They're the Chicago friggin' Cubs, and they ought to be able to go after these guys. They ought to be as aggressive as anybody else. We know the history. They're not. They tended to be a risk-averse front office. They're a skittish ownership when it comes to big money. And even Dansby Swanson, when they went out and got the big guy in Dansby Swanson, he was fourth in contract value of the four big shortstops who were out there. So even within that, they're not going top of the market in terms of how aggressive they are on some of these guys. I don't mean they got it wrong with Swanson. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when it comes to these big, huge, big ticket guys, we've seen how they operate. That's where the pie in the sky comes from. It's not because I don't think they should do it.
Yeah, but getting Soto or Alonso in a trade is not a big ticket guy in terms of money. It's a big ticket guy in terms of name.
It's both, because if you go get these guys, you have to think in terms of re-signing them, or the player capital you're giving up becomes even bigger for what you're getting back a couple of years. I don't know.
Both guys are free agents after this coming season.
After this year. So you're getting one full season. So it's not quite a rental player.
It's extravagant to get them.
But these guys are top of the market cap. Of course, it's going to be, especially Soto, who could transform a lineup all by himself if you already have a couple pieces. So, yeah, I do think the prices will be high. If they genuinely make these guys available, the prices will be sky high. And so you have to think in terms, if you're going to spend that, because the Padres already did it, right? They did it with, 3 years plus or whatever of Soto under club control. They went out and made that big trade. And the idea was that Machado was coming up and they would turn around and commit the $400 million plus or whatever it was going to take to get Soto signed long term. Things changed with them, but they gave up a lot to get him, a ton to get him.
But they got a 22-year-old guy. The Cubs are getting 1 year. I think the price will be heavy, but I don't think it's going to be extraordinary like it was.
They're still getting a massively young guy, a guy that when he's eligible for free agency is going to be young the way Machado and Harper were young. By the way, Jason Hayward was young. I know people react to the contract, but the reason he got such a big contract, the reason he was getting 10-year offers from all these other teams, Cubs got him for 8, was because he was 26. He was the unusually young free agent who had some accomplishments. These guys have massive accomplishments. The Harpers and Machados and now Sotos of the world coming onto the free agent market young. They're big ticket free agents, but also if you're going to go get this guy in a trade, he's going to command a lot in a trade, or they may not do it.
If I'm the Cubs and I can get Soto, I don't want to give up for 1 year Cade Horton and Pete Crow Armstrong, but I can't let, I love Pete Crow Armstrong. I cannot let a prospect that I think I can get re-signed. Now, again, I got to be able to think I can get Soto re-signed. If I feel like I could get him, then there's nobody untouchable in my system.
I agree with that. So it's going to take a ranked prospect at least to begin. That's going to be, you got to build a package around that, if not two ranked prospects. You finally have the farm system where you could do that. So fine. If you want to do that, good. Go do that. Now you know you're going to have to come back and make him an offer that's market value. You're not going to get him on. I love Chicago, so I'll do it for 2 years less, or I'll do it for $20 million less at the end of the deal, whatever. No, you're going to have to pay him what the free agent market would pay him.
That's going to be $350 million. And if he has a great year next year, that's $400 million.
Okay. Then go do it. He would be the guy. He would be the guy that of those that you listed, he'd be the one that I'd want.
If I'm a risk-averse front office, Jesus Christ, he's 25 freaking years old as we tape this podcast here. You want 10 years for Juan Soto and he has a really good year next year, he's worth every goddamn penny.
I'm with you. I agree. I wasn't arguing that this pie in the sky that I wouldn't do it, or philosophically that it's wrong. I just don't know. We'll see. If they do that, Cap, if they go trade for him and turn around and sign him to that 10-year extension, I'll eat my goatee.
That'd be amazing. Look, you could look at it if you say they're risk averse, and I agree with you. Okay, I look at Pete Alonso, I go, oh boy, he strikes out a ton. Okay, he hits a lot of homers. Yes, he is. It's like a right-handed Schwarber. Okay, let's look at Cody Bellinger. Boy, he had a couple really down years. He didn't finish the season as strong as he was the middle 4 months. Okay, I get it. Juan Soto, there is no downside. None.
He's not the glove that Bellinger is, but I mean, I'm nitpicking there.
I don't give a shit about the glove.
Essentially, you're right.
Left-handed bat.
I'm with you. I agree with you. That's what this team needs. You need that guy. You need what, and you know, obviously I'm not, this is apples and oranges to the degree of the player. They are total package, but you need that Rizzo guy. You need that guy that is the left-handed guy in your lineup. That's fearsome, that can take a good at bat, that's got power,
yeah,
that you then build the lineup around. And he's got to be left-handed. It's just too easy to pitch to an over right-handed lineup. There aren't that many left-handed guys. You go look at the most successful teams in recent years, really in history, and the best teams, the ones that we always talk about, the 27 Yankees, about when the Red Sox, when they had Ramirez and Ortiz, Mantle and Maris, you know, when we talk about those great teams, there's a monster left-hander anchoring down the middle of that lineup. And that makes a difference for the whole lineup. It is massive a deal. We saw that here. We saw that in Chicago with Rizzo, what he did for everybody in that lineup by being that guy. That's what they need.
All right, before I let you go, here is the contemporary baseball era committee that will meet in December 2023 to consider the election of 8 managers, executive, or umpires who have made the greatest impact on the game since 1980. The managers are Cito Gaston, Davey Johnson, Jim Leland, Ed Montague, Hank Peters, Lou Piniella, Joe West, and Bill White. So,
well, some of those obviously are executives and umpires.
Correct. That's the guys that are all eligible for voting. There was Tom Kelly and Philippe Lou and a bunch of others that did not make that final ballot, but those are the 8. So if you're voting on that list, who are you voting for?
You know what, man? I think this might be when Lou gets in. I think Lou's top couple on that list. Maybe him and Leland, as far as the managers go. And then I think Joe West, you know, unless people come in and have some sort of personal thing with Joe West umpired more games than anybody in history. And so that's one of those.
75%?
Yes, and it's like what, 16 guys in the room, and it's I'm trying to remember how that works, either because they changed the voting. I don't know how many you get to vote for, but it can make a big, like, there's a lot of lobbying going on in the room. So I think Lou can get that. Joe West might get that. I mean, you're not going to see any more than 2 guys get in, but if it were those 2 guys, I don't know which one, because Joe West for umpires is kind of an automatic.
Yes.
Lou, let me ask you this. Give me Lou's biggest credential and his biggest, in the biggest argument against him.
The biggest credential? I mean, he's won the World Series. He was a standout manager with and executive with the Yankees and the Mariners and the Reds and the Cubs and the Rays. Like, he has a track record of success. What is his biggest detriment? Never won in Seattle with all that talent. Never won with the Rays with really good teams, and never won with the Cubs. Didn't even win a playoff game.
So I overlap with you a little bit of a Venn diagram there. Like, so he's got wins enough to be in the conversation. He's got enough success regular season across multiple teams. He's won everywhere except Tampa. And I would make the case that the good Tampa teams were just starting to come together when he left. So there's that. Take Tampa for what it's worth. So you kind of take that on balance and it compares, you can debate. To me, the credentials that put you over the top or are the kinds that could lose you a debate are, one, he won in 90, was it 91, 90 with the Reds in a massive upset. So he got those guys, he got the most out of a team that was supposed to, that wasn't supposed to win. I'm not sure they were supposed to win either playoff series that year. And they knocked off that juggernaut Oakland team. So that's a huge credential. The credentials, the argument against him would be that when he got there with Seattle with a 116-win team, he almost lost in the first round. Now, a lot was going on there. We had 9/11, and that upset the season, and it changed a lot of things. It changed the dynamic in New York, for instance, the team that eventually knocked him out. But to your point, he didn't get there with those Seattle teams. And this is the and I love Lou. I absolutely love Lou. I respect him as a baseball man. I would vote for him. But I remember in 2007 when he got there with the Cubs, which arguably he shouldn't have, right? They started off really slow. They finished strong.
He got 23 and 32. He got into it with Mark Wegner, and he got him turned around.
Right. So they get there, and then they go against an unheralded young Arizona Diamondbacks team. He's got Carlos Zambrano the first game pitching his ass off. He pulled Zambrano on a short pitch count after six innings with maybe a one-run lead at the time. Or no, a tie game. Tie game at the time,
yep.
I believe, thinking that he was going to save him for a game four start because his rotation wasn't deep. Well, that, obviously they didn't get to game four. It's the antithesis of how everybody manages the playoffs now. And at the time it was probably recognized as a cardinal sin of how you manage in the playoffs even then. And so those would be the two things, but man, the guy, one of the best baseball guys I've ever been around, he could look at a team and he would get all the names wrong. But it was like the Matrix. Like, he saw the baseball in every one of those guys and could put it together on the field into a winner. And,
what about Gaston?
You know, his big credentials are the back-to-back championships.
And four out of 5 years in Toronto, the first go-around, the first four out of five, he won the division.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the longevity as some of these other guys. And some of that, he'll tell you, he wasn't getting interviews at times for jobs he wanted, even after winning. So you can take that.
He went to the ALCS twice and lost and went again and won two World Series. Four out of five years.
No doubt. No doubt. And he may yet get in. A lot of times what you see is when these guys have success with multiple teams, it kind of gives you this idea. That he makes an impact where he goes. Wherever he goes, he makes an impact. Right. As opposed to, well, this might have been. I think Pat Gillick might have been his GM at the time, and we know Gillick is a Hall of Fame executive. So you know, there's that symbiosis there of the management ladder, and he doesn't have the track record of multiple other teams that you can go to and say, well, he also did it there.
Well, I'll give it to Lou Piniella because I'm a big fan, and I'll give it to Joe West. Gordon, have a great rest of your day, man. Enjoy seeing your mom out there in Seattle. That's super cool.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
There he is, the great Gordon Whitmire. I'm David Kaplan. This is another edition of the Cubs Recap Podcast, a presentation of our Recap channel here on YouTube and available audio only everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. Have a great rest of your day. Take that.